call 658-4101. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Racine Art Museum features community artists in a creature-themed exhibition open through August 11th. The show, Creatures, features works of art that show the viewer which beasts, pets, and animals evoke the artist's true self.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta, and our topic on Community Matters today is a deep dive into what's going on in Pleasant Prairie. And we have with us today Nathan Teal, the new village administrator. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Len.
Well, you've been on the job now for how long?
About 2 months. So
you can find your way to work at this point,
right? That's right. Oftentimes I have to ask people, am I going in the right direction? So fortunately, the transportation, the roads are pretty good. They direct us in the right to the right place.
And you have all those wonderful new traffic circles that
exactly.
You don't have to take responsibility before, but I love them, and not all of my friends do. Well, we'll be easy on you in terms of the past.
But I appreciate
we'd like to
that.
Talk about your impressions of the present and the future and what you know about what's going on. I think we're all very aware of the fact that the We Energy's power plant is offline. It's been offline since May, I believe. I look out my kitchen window at that stack, and it's kind of weird not to see that plume anymore, although I'm glad it's gone. Can't orient yourself to say, well, that's Kenosha now when you're at Six Flags on top of a roller coaster like you used to. What's going to be the status of the power plant, and what do you think is going to be the long-term progression on that land?
Good question. I wish that I could give you a ton of answers on that. I know that the village has been reaching out to We Energies to kind of understand their timelines. It's kind of been a little bit of a black box mystery. But as you mentioned, they closed in I think the end of April, beginning of May, and completely concur. You know, you no longer have that stack. It's somewhat you miss it a little bit. But anyways, from what I've heard, I know that they're going to be demolitioning the site, bringing it back to square one. There has been some talk about potentially retrofitting the site as a gas, natural gas plant, but that's kind of just rumor mill. So honestly, if I knew more, I wish I could share. The biggest thing from a village standpoint is that there's going to be a loss in revenue because of that closure.
Let's talk about that. How long will that last, and when does it start?
Yeah,
that
so
loss of revenue.
So the state basically they receive funds for basically taxes for utilities for energy, and for those communities and municipalities that have plants in their community, they issue a state aid. And at the state level, they're not going to see a reduction in their revenues. But fortunately, as these coal plants are decommissioned, they'll see a reduction in the amount of aid that they're giving to the municipalities. In our case, it represents about $1.5 million that magically just kind of disappears over a five-year period. And so that's kind of the struggle right now. How do you make up those revenues? And when there isn't much flexibility at the local level to generate revenue,
are there additional revenues that are paid directly to Pleasant Prairie by We Energies for that?
No, no, correct. The plant itself needs to, now that it's been decommissioned, needs to be assessed and brought onto the tax roll in a way, so it will reduce the burden for other individuals and that pay taxes, but that doesn't generate new revenue for the village. And so, we're kind of trying to figure out, we're trying to find a legislative solution to help us out so that we're not just 1.5 in the negative.
What would be a legislative solution, Mr. Teal?
So a good example is kind of taking the thought process of what would happen if a plant closed in the village that's a private plant. If a private plant closed and went offline and was demolished, it would come off the tax roll, right? And what would happen is that burden would be spread out amongst all the people that pay taxes. In this case, the monies are outside of that levy. And so one solution would be for us to basically allow us to make an adjustment to our levy to compensate for that 1.5. What that will do is that would increase, it would spread that burden out across all the taxpayers. So it's not perfect because it might impact how much taxes each individual pays.
And you'd need legislation in order to be able to do that,
yeah.
Because
right now we're limited. We have what's called a tax levy limit.
And so those limits that went into legislative action a few years ago are biting us now in this case.
Is correct. Right? There's nothing that we really can do. It's basically a zero levy limit. So you can't increase the levy except for what's called net new construction. So when you have new construction, they allow for your levy to bump up according to what's been newly constructed.
Well, what about the land from the standpoint of ownership? It's owned by We Energies, which is a private corporation.
Correct.
Publicly traded. Right.
So again, like I said, it will need to be assessed, but that assessment is not going to create the same value.
Well, who's going to be the owner of that land?
We Energies, I believe, will continue to be the owner.
They're not going to sell it to the village or the village?
That would be nice. There's some, clearly, you know, that's a double-edged sword.
We Energies has been extremely important in the development of business and business parks and commerce and the thriving of Pleasant Prairie.
Correct.
As I've observed it. So I'm wondering.
That whole Lakeview corporate park was.
I would love to get them on the show and find out what they're thinking, because they have really helped with some great vision, it seems to me.
Correct. Yeah, that whole Lakeview corporate park is basically was precipitated by We Energies and their efforts with Wiz Park.
And that has spread to others.
Correct. And again, I'm hopeful that they'll kind of come and have some more roundtable discussions and talk with us and help us understand their thought processes for the redevelopment of that property. But just to give you context, I think we are talking about we would need about 20 large-scale industrial facilities to make up for that $1.5 million. Because in generally speaking, Pleasant Prairie, you know, you have X amount of dollars for tax revenue. Pleasant Prairie's portion of the pie is pretty small. And so in order to make up that 1.5, we would need about 20 new industrial plants in order to make us whole again.
Well, that's enough to make you want to rip your hair out about planning for the future, because that's a lot of uncertainty. But I'm going to give you something else you could be ripping your hair out about, and that is the dark stores issue. I think most of our listeners have heard this discussed on the program before, but why don't you talk a little bit about what the dark stores issue is and why it's so important in Pleasant Prairie. And there was just a recent action at the beginning of this month in terms of Pleasant Prairie joining the campaign. What's all that about, Mr. Teal?
Yeah, so during the last legislative session, there was an act that was brought to the floor, or wasn't brought to the floor. It was actually stopped, and there was a bipartisan support for it, but the leadership just didn't feel it was worthy to put on the agenda. The intent is basically several retail box stores, Walgreens in particular, basically want their assessment to be valued at their store being dark, meaning that if they weren't in the store selling items, what would the value of that property be? And it's basically a tax break to commerce, and redistributes the burden of taxes onto residential property owners.
Well, this is a result of legislation passed on behalf of all of us by our legislators in Madison. Is that not right?
I believe it's more a judicial, some judicial acts, and basically those rulings brought about arguments that allow for retail and commerce to argue to the assessors that their value of their property is over-assessed.
So they're talk now about having the legislature enact some legislation that closes what's being called
the loophole.
Dark store loophole.
Correct.
In the existing law that some corporations found and some courts have said is okay.
Right. And so the Village of Pleasant Prairie recently joined the League of Municipalities has a campaign that they're trying to run because basically when the legislators, the leadership, decided to pull this this legislation at the last minute. They said that they were going to form a committee, a study committee. And the League, in order to keep this topic, you know, at the forefront, is wanting to make sure that we're properly addressing and campaigning for the support of this legislation. And Pleasant Prairie felt it responsibility to participate. It's a shame that taxpayer dollars have to go to marketing and campaigning, but when we're up against very large retail commerce here in the state from, you know, Kohl's, Menards, and so forth, it makes it difficult to make some powerful arguments when you have big money arguing the opposite.
Well, this dark store thing would work for me if I could say I have a dark house and didn't have to pay any taxes on my house. I'd like that idea.
That's an excellent comparison. You know, anybody could argue the value of their property any which way. And our preference is that we let the market decide. Rather than having a judge or having legislation decide for us that those values should be decided by the market. One of the top arguments that's kind of being floated out there is that, well, we need to take a merciful approach for these retailers because of the Amazons in the world and internet commerce is kind of taking over. Well, the fact is that let the market work that out. But instead trying to take a proactive approach and be merciful before the market's even given any signs or indications, it's a little short-sighted.
Well, the League of Municipalities certainly makes sense to me on this issue. And I wonder how important an impact is this on the individual level to the average homeowner. I know there have been some studies. Do you happen to recall what those numbers are?
So, Len, if it were to go to the extreme, it probably impact a normal property owner by about 15%. So they could see their taxes increase. If all commercial that fell under this dark store rule were to apply that assessment, it could be a significant impact. And just on that same note, you know, we have levy limits that limit our ability to increase taxes. But when we're giving these incentives to commerce and to industrial, there's another legislation out there that's trying to basically get rid of personal property tax. And it's not allowing the municipalities to make it up or to increase their levy. Basically, what happens is we give breaks to industrial owners and we give breaks to commercial owners, but meanwhile, the heavier burden is being shared by the residents. And so then the residents come to the village and say, my taxes are increasing and you're making more money. And that's not the case at all because our levy is frozen. We're not seeing any increase and we're the bad guys.
Well, home rule. There used to be a concept called home rule that was very strong in the past, but that doesn't seem to be the case as much as it was. Madison seems to want to make a lot of decisions for the communities, and this is one example where the home rule idea probably makes a lot of sense. Is that what you would say, Mr. Kale?
It's unfortunate. Yes, I would concur. It's sad that, you know, when you talk with politicians who are running, for instance, you know, they say that a lot of these decisions are best made at the local level. But then when push comes to shove, we see kind of the opposite take effect. And there's a desire to have control. And what's sad is that maybe there's one municipality that makes a mistake, and then all other municipalities have to share in that burden.
What about premium outlets? I was just there to buy a pair of shoes. You've got a lot of stores there. The impact of this dark store legislation, is that an example where that facility could be impacted?
That would be a perfect example. It could have a significant impact. And by the way, it should be noted that the premium outlets, I mean, they're one of the largest taxpaying entities in the county. So, you know, we appreciate, and this is no knock against any retailer or commercial real estate owner. A lot of these individuals are willing to support their community and pay their fair share, but you know, if they could have a tax break, I think they'd take it too as well.
Well,
I think
some of these are public corporations, and public corporations are fortunately or unfortunately responsible to their shareholders, and the benefit of you in Pleasant Prairie is not on their docket.
That's very true.
I'm here this morning on Community Matters with the relatively new village administrator, Nathan Teal of Pleasant Prairie. Nathan, you've been on the job now for about 2 months. I like to ask newcomers, because you are a newcomer to the area, what are your impressions? You came here, I don't know what first ever brought you to Kenosha, but you came here for a job interview and you probably started really paying attention at that point. What did you notice about Kenosha and Pleasant Prairie as a fresh pair of eyes?
Well, from anyone outside of the southeast region of the state, you know, this location, this area is growing and is poised to grow significantly in the next few years. And so, of course, that's attractive for a guy like me who enjoys municipal work and likes to see progress and economic development. So that's what first caught my eye.
Well, we had been put high on the list to overtake Green Bay as in third place, I think, for largest city in Wisconsin here in Kenosha some time ago after the last census, and the three-county area that our signal covers here from Gateway Technical College, Walworth, Racine, and Kenosha counties has been singled out as being the fastest-growing part of the state, and that was long before all of the new road construction and Foxconn. That seems like a lot of acceleration. Is it scary to you to see so much so fast? You know, when I moved back to Kenosha, and I had been working in Chicago, I moved back here 18 years ago and built my home in Whitecaps. There was nothing surrounding me, and that whole area of Pleasant Prairie was just beautiful corn.
Right.
The development is really, really fast. How are we coping with that? How do you feel about the outlook of this kind of rapid development?
Yeah, so just to give you some a side note, I recall I am actually originally from the Appleton area, so we would travel down to Chicago on the I-94 and 41, and I remember when there wasn't much here at all, and now it's just completely changed on State Highway 50 and so forth. I mean, that has just blossomed. And you have Foxconn and all the development that's taking place to the north in Racine County. And then right now we have a significant project just in Pleasant Prairie, which is Haribo, which will be a significant job bringer to the area. And so, yeah, definitely. When first was on the job, I mean, the first week was like, you know, jump on the roller coaster and let's go, giddy up. And, you know, it can be somewhat scary, right? Fortunately, you know, with a planning background and good public policy, the hope is that we can grow smart, right? That we can, with proper planning, make sure that we're addressing the needs. There are always be concerns, but I've found that you just take one bite at a time and keep going.
What does smart growth mean? That term gets used more and more frequently.
Yeah, so, I mean, from Pleasant Prairie standpoint, I think that they've done a very good job at setting standards.
There's a 2035 comprehensive plan. I just printed out the table of contents of it, and it really is comprehensive, and I imagine that it's been updated. I can see that, and I'm sure that is one of the first things they've handed you. Is that
right? Right, and there's a desire to follow that plan. Of course, all plans change; they morph over time. But what's critical is making sure that you have proper standards and you live to those standards. And in Pleasant Prairie, we want to make sure that the infrastructure that we lay down isn't going to we're just doing a Band-Aid where we put in infrastructure and then 20 years down the line, we made it so that development could come in. But now we have to take care of this road, and we don't have the tax revenue or the means by which to take care of it. We're very, very deliberate and specific in the type of development that comes in and making sure that they meet our standards. So perfect case in point, when I was speaking of roads, with residential roads, typically we'll lay a very, very strong base, basically a concrete base, and then overlay that with asphalt. Well, the hope is, with that base being down, we're just every once in a while doing maintenance on that asphalt, but we're not having to reconstruct the road. And so it's things like that, it's standards like that matter. The materials that you have in your buildings and use in your buildings have an impact not only on the value, the quality of life, the aesthetic, but also in the life of the product. If we're going around, turning around and tearing down buildings 50 years from now, we probably weren't acting in a very, very smart and conscientious.
So building codes are really a part of it in the long-range future, as well as sound infrastructure that's built with an expectation of a longer lifetime,
right,
not just an immediate fix.
Right, right. And all the other things that come with it. Are we making sure that we have sufficient housing for the jobs that we're bringing in? Are we making sure that we have adequate parks and opportunities for people to not just work and live, but also play?
Let's talk about housing a little bit. Now, Pleasant Prairie has a minimum lot size, doesn't it?
Correct, yeah.
So for a single-family home, there's just so many of those that can be built in terms of density.
Right.
Now, I see a lot of apartments going up in the Pleasant Prairie area, some of them kind of near me whole Target St. Catherine's complex across the street from Whitecaps. Can you talk a little bit about that? There seems to be a deliberate plan to have low density and high density residential areas as part of our plan.
Yeah, there needs to be a proper mix. When we talk about high density versus low density or trying to have concentration of housing, not everybody wants to own a home. Right. Not everybody wants to mow a quarter acre yard or a half acre yard.
Generation Z, especially, and some of the millennials, see themselves as being very mobile, and home ownership and adding to the debt they already carry as students as being an untenable idea.
Yeah. And what we're finding is that they're just delayed. They don't, owning a home was an earlier prospect a generation ago. We're finding that they delay it just a little bit longer. But also, we have the baby boomer generation who also they were very successful. They built their dream house, and now they're realizing, their kids are out and they want to do a little more travel, and it doesn't make sense to have to clean a huge home anymore.
Thank you for reminding me. I'm getting older.
No fingers pointing, Glenn. But there is a need for a mixture. There's a need for a mix.
So the senior housing that's going up, do you want to talk a little bit about that and where that's going to be? That caught my eye because I hadn't remembered seeing much about senior housing in Pleasant Prairie before.
Yeah, so that's actually a neat little development on the east side of town, or east side of the village, called Ava Manor. And I don't know, I should have all those details, but basically it's a unit for senior housing that's going to be going on a what was a brownfield in the village. We created a TID district, and we cleaned up the site, and we're very much looking forward to developing it, and then it kind of just fell by the wayside, and then fortunately, Bear Development, we've been able to have some discussions with them, and develop that site. I believe it's around 40 units that are going to be established as senior housing.
Yes, that's what was reported in the Kenosha News, and I think that this is a very attractive idea because we have more senior housing in the downtown area of Kenosha. Having senior housing available in Pleasant Prairie, I think, is very attractive. And people want to age in place, but not necessarily in their home,
right?
Because the maintenance of it and the expense of it becomes difficult as one ages.
So one thing that's been kind of fun is, having these discussions where actually the Village of Pleasant Prairie is in the process of conducting a housing study just to kind of firm up kind of the statistics and the arguments for what housing needs we have in the area. And the real desire is to develop the Village Green area. That's been kind of on the back burners and the plan for a long, long while. But with the new developments and the growth that we're seeing from an employment standpoint, we're hoping to create a little bit more of a village center, if you will. And in order to make that work from a retail level and a commercial level, there's going to need to be some additional density. And so I would not be surprised if we see additional multifamily uses in that area. Clearly, community is going to need to be involved in on those conversations, perhaps a little bit of re-education. But again, all good things to come. We look forward to seeing those solutions.
Now, how is that study being conducted? Tell us a little bit more about the study you referenced. Is that just a statistical study of secondary analysis of data, or is it something else?
Correct. So basically right now, it's going to be just a preliminary statistical data set and analysis. We'll work with a consultant. We're in the process of finishing up an RFP to get someone to basically do that work for us, and it's basically a very 30,000 foot level, put the numbers together and actually justify or show justification for the needs and to approach developers, future developers, as we look to move that development or that neighborhood plan forward.
The migration of Uline and the other manufacturers you mentioned to Pleasant Prairie, I suppose that has implications for housing for people at all levels within the organization. Do you believe that Pleasant Prairie and Kenosha are positioned to capture the interest for living of the more senior people who live in, who work in these industries? Or is this going to be housing for workforce and white collar at a junior level that you're looking at, you suppose? So do you have any idea about that yet?
So I've been 2 months on the job, Lynn, so I probably have a little bit more to learn to be able to speak intelligently towards that. But again, the thought process is that, at least from my background, you want to be an inclusive community. You want to be a community that draws from a variety of different backgrounds. It makes a community more a community that's more attractive and provides a better quality of life. So depending on what those needs, and hopefully as we look and evaluate those studies as they come out, we'll be able to have a little bit better answers for that question. I don't mean to punt the question, but if I knew more, I could ramble on, I'm sure, for hours.
Well, I thought that was a good answer. We're here with the new village administrator of Pleasant Prairie, Nathan Teal, this morning on Community Matters. Nathan, one of the things that's been going on and attracting a lot of attention is road construction. I'm sure you've noticed that already. There's probably more road construction going on in a major way than I can remember at any one point in my lifetime in Kenosha over all these years and coming back to visit when I lived away. It's amazing what Foxconn has done in terms of stimulating instant response on I-94 and in the northern part of the county. Happily, it seems like all of Pleasant Prairie's major road projects are done for a while. What's the status of roads in Pleasant Prairie in terms of construction and reconstruction for the rest of 2018?
Yeah, so 2018, we have a fairly limited amount of nothing too attractive or worthwhile taking up airtime. I know that if I were to report on just a few things, I think the biggest project that will be coming up is State Highway 50. But that's a DOT project. It's scheduled still another 5 years down the road. Sometimes that can get kicked a little bit. But as far as significant road projects, you're right. It's fairly limited. The big project that we're going to have this coming year is in preparation for the Haribo plant.
What is that about?
So if you're aware of Haribo, they're the gummy bear factory or plant. It's out of Germany. They employ about 7,000 worldwide. It's a family-owned business. They're going to be locating their headquarters. It's scheduled to be about a $262 million development out west of the I-94/41 corridor. And so we're going to be, as a part of that developer's agreement, we're constructing several roads in preparation for what we call the Prairie Highlands Corporate Park. So that, if you've had any time here, you probably can recall the Abbott property, and not to bring back past wounds, but basically the Village of Pleasant Prairie was able to acquire that property, and they're positioned to develop it now with Haribo, and then also Aurora is another partner that's going to be building a hospital out in that land.
So what kind of road construction is that going to be? Is it going to be a major project of new roads or existing roads being...
Correct. New roads that are being constructed. So, basically there will be one road going east-west and one road going from, I believe it's, hopefully I get this right, County Highway C, and I believe it's U for, I just remember U line, so...
Pleasant Prairie is known for a lot of recreation as well as for shopping. Have you been to the Renaissance Fair yet?
No, but my kids have been talking with me, and the plan is to go here in the next couple of weeks. So
I have out-of-town guests coming. I think we're going to be there this weekend. Maybe I'll see you there. Pleasant Prairie has an amazing recreational complex.
The Recplex.
That was developed around the same time as that whole industrial park and We Energies came into the picture. I think it was done as a holistic idea,
right?
In phases, of course. There has been some concerns over the years over whether parts of the recreation complex could carry their weight financially in terms of turn a profit. That's always difficult with amenities. We had a big issue in Kenosha about the golf courses a while ago. We seem to have turned that around. Can you tell us a little bit about the recreational opportunities in Pleasant Prairie and how that's working out financially for the village?
Yeah.
In addition to the fact that it is a draw, which is a given.
Right, right. Well, actually, I'm excited to report that in 2017 they were in the black about $300,000. So that was a very good positive. And then right now they're hitting their numbers as far as programs, events, and advertisements, which I give a lot of tribute to the new rec director, Craig Anderson, who's just done a phenomenal job, has a wonderful team. So anyways, point is that we're excited that Recplex is now starting to actually be whole. And if you've been out there, they're currently right now doing a lot of renovations, redoing the roof over the Aqua Center. They're also putting on some bathroom facilities on the multi-purpose rooms and the basketball courts so that they can host larger scale tournaments. Before those tournaments, they were required to go out into the lobby, and the bathrooms were pretty minimal. So we're really excited about the abilities that site's going to have here in the next little bit.
How do you finance this upgrades and needed repairs?
So,
it seems a little early to repair the roof, saying.
Well, I don't want to get too bogged down into weeds, but basically there were some structural issues when it was built, and we were working through those issues, and now we're where basically the village has leveraged some debt in order to make those fixes, but they were necessary fixes. If you're aware of the splash pad area, there's a pool pack that we're going to be actually installing later this year, which will help with the ventilation processes and make sure that it's properly heated and cooled and vented. So point is that there are a lot of good things that are taking place at the RecPlex, and again, we're hopeful that we'll see a greater turnaround and to the elimination of debt in its entirety out at the RecPlex in the next couple of years. So
that's great. 2-year timeline to be debt free.
It won't be a 2-year timeline.
Okay.
No, sorry, you should probably be more honest. Right now, I think it's scheduled for a 10-year time frame, but don't quote me on that. I'm still learning.
That seems about reasonable for something like that. And it's an amenity that is an attractive amenity in terms of attracting the kind of homeowners, workers, and businesses who want to be in an environment where their workers are going to be happy and have the amenities and the access to recreation that they want and need and require for themselves and their families. So there's a long-term investment as part of economic development that seemed to me to be quite extraordinary in terms of the vision of the village.
I know personally that was one of the attracting features for coming to this position. So, I mean, I'm excited to continue to see the RecPlex and their success. One thing to note, Len, too, just so you know, it is now officially Lake Andrea. We got notice from the federal government that our name for Lake Andrea is now officially noticed. That's breaking news.
Well, that's great. Thank you. I'm glad you broke that here. I didn't realize it wasn't an official name. I've certainly great respect for the person who's named for and a newly individual. And that's really great news. Yeah. I didn't know that we had to go through hoops to do that.
I laugh somewhat, just because it's what the locals have always known it to be. But
yes.
Anyways, we've now gotten permission by the feds to that's official.
And that's a good piece of exercise, hiking around that lake. I like to do that. When you took this job, you probably had some ideas as to what you would like to see happen, based on what people told you and what your personal interests are in community development and planning. If I could, in a couple of minutes, could you tell us a little bit, Nathan, what your goals would be for a village? This is a different kind of an assignment for you. I had some time to take a look at the comprehensive plan. How do you see, what do you see are the opportunities for Pleasant Prairie that excite you and the people you're talking with?
Yeah, thanks. That's a wonderful question. That's the kind of question I get, you know, when they were in the hiring process. You know, for me personally, one of my core strengths is trying to build create a sense of place for a community. You know, you can come and you can live in a place, you can work in a place, you can play in a place, and it's a destination, but it doesn't mean anything until it's your home, until it's something, a location that it resonates, that attracts you, that you're invested in. It's not truly home. And so, anyways, I guess the thought process, the thing that excited me most about the Village of Pleasant Prairie is this concept of creating a village center. Because where is the village? You know, when you drive through Pleasant Prairie, where is the village?
I've often asked that.
And I think so far they have done a magnificent job of planning and making sure that, you know, that they're doing a smart plan. But now they're getting to the point where they're getting to become one of their own, a larger community that should be recognized, where people can point to the map and say, this is Pleasant Prairie. I think they've done that with the RecPlex, creating a sense of destination. We can look at several instances within the village where there are earmarked destinations. At Lakeview Corporate Park, I remember, just a side note, when I was interviewing in the community that I was last in, you know, they were asking, you know, is there any way we can get you to stay? And I just turned to him. I said, you know, they have one of the largest industrial parks in the state, and there isn't a metal prefabbed building there. It's all tip-up concrete. And I just said, what? How magnificent is that? And they said, so what you're saying is we can't get you back. And anyway, it was a funny side story. But the point is that if there were one thing that I would look forward to seeing is being able to say, this is the village. This is who we are. This is where we are. This is where we gather. This is us. And so creating that sense of space has always been an aspect of my personal career and passion. And I think that there's an excellent opportunity here in the village to fulfill that goal.
The current Village Green has really developed very nicely in the last year or so, and it looks great to drive through. And it is a place to bring people now and say, well, here's the center of Pleasant Prairie. Because I've had the experience of driving out-of-towners around and say, well, here's Pleasant Prairie. And they say, well, where's the center of town? And I say, well, that's a good question.
Right.
I mean, it's not prime outlets
or
premium outlets as it's now known.
It's very beautiful and attractive, but it would be nice to have some shops that you could walk around.
Need some retail and need some population too.
Yep.
People living there, so that it's not just a deserted area at night. But it's very attractive and very well planned. Nathan, tell us a little bit more about your background, just in terms of your education that brings you to this field. You just wake up one morning and say, "Mommy and Daddy, I want to become a city administrator," or was it a little more complicated?
No, not in the slightest. Although I will tell you that as a kid, I don't know if you'll recall, there was a game that was pretty popular in the 90s and late 80s of SimCity.
Yes.
And anyways, so I think that may have sparked sparked my passion, but you know, it all kind of went away, and I originally had plans to be an architect, and went to school, got a degree in undergrad degree was in communications and marketing, which no offense, but for me personally, I got that degree, and then it was like, now what do I do? And I didn't have the voice for radio, so I had to try to find work, and I was figuring that I needed to go to some higher education, some higher level of education in order to make something of myself. And I was attracted to the master's in public administration. I didn't want to become a business major. It wasn't quite my cup of tea. But public administration and the idea of public service just really attracted me. So I put in my application to Syracuse University, the Maxwell School, which is
a very fine school.
A very fine school. We pride ourselves on being ranked number one. And I was shocked when I got in. And they tend to be a little bit more directing people to the federal level or towards international relations. And I went to... And I promise it won't take much longer, but I went to an ICMA conference, International City County Management Association, and there I was just listening to a speaker, and they talked about how sometimes in local government you get into the war stories, right? All the bad things that are taking place. But then he talked about leaving a legacy. And when he said that, it just resonated with me. And so I've been hooked ever since,
glad you're here. We hope you'll leave a great legacy and build on the foundations of the great people who have come before you. My guest this morning on Community Matters has been Nathan Teal, the new village administrator of Pleasant Prairie. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta saying, get informed, get involved, good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for WGTD comes from Sandy's Popper, Southeast Wisconsin's headquarters for gourmet cheddar, caramel, and kettle corn, and more than 50 original varieties. Featuring gift tins, boxes, and packs, custom orders for special events, 5503 6th Avenue in Kenosha, sandyspopper.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, celebrating 10 sweet treat vendors, including Apple Holler, East of Eden Bakery, Fraternity Notre Dame, La Tarte Bakery, and Lou's Old Fashioned Coffee Cakes. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Douay.
Support for WGTD comes from Classic Violins, the premier southeastern Wisconsin workshop for family violin instruments. Master Luthier, always on premises. Free estimates. ClassicViolins.com, 262-57-